called Cello. The music of Jamie Sieber, opening up our show with her rendition of Undercurrent from the CD entitled Lush Mechanique. Tonight's program showcases this instrument throughout the show. We'll feature the cello as a performance voice on its own. We'll also hear an interview I did with San Francisco-based cello musician and instructor Beth Welch Snellings, who will be talking to us more about the sounds we are hearing. Meanwhile, Mary Moore Campagna is with me in studio and on the engineering boards. Greg Moralia has the Outbeat News. And once again, you're listening to KRCB's Outbeat Music. I'm Michaela Kennan. Let's return to Jamie Sieber. Nice to have you back. As the old joke goes, what is the most important part of the body one uses when they play the cello? One's ear. Because the beauty of the cello is as much about how it is played as how it is heard. Of all the instruments in the string family, it is said the rich singing sound of the cello makes it seem most like the human voice. A cello player will tell you it is probably the most human of all the instruments we know. Even physically, it seems to become part of one's body through the mere act of holding it close and feeling the vibrations of its sound. We'll hear more about this as we continue through the program. For now, let's go to Greg Moralia with the Outbeat News.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, November 13th, 2011. Frank Mugisha, a gay rights activist in Uganda, will receive the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award, making the first time honor to be bestowed on someone working for an LGBT rights organization. The Associated Press reports that Mugisha will receive the award, named for the late U.S. Attorney General and Senator from New York, during a ceremony Thursday on Capitol Hill. Ethel Kennedy, his widow, will present the award to Mugisha with Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts. Mugisha told the AP, "It gives me more courage to continue doing the work I'm doing. It sends out a message not only to my country, but to other countries that criminalize homosexuality." Mugisha, 29 years old, serves as the executive director of Sexual Minorities Uganda and is one of the few openly gay activists in Uganda. The work is exceedingly dangerous in the East African nation, where Parliament has been considering a bill that would impose harsh prison sentences and, in some cases, death on gay people. In his work, Mugisha has focused on the link between American evangelicals and the legislation. Parliament considered the bill, and violence against LGBT people increased after religious activists from the United States visited Uganda in 2009 and held a conference about the rehabilitation for gays. Mugisha said they held a seminar and openly told Ugandans that they needed to tighten their laws on homosexuality and told Ugandans that homosexuality can be healed. Mugisha will receive $30,000 and a 6-year partnership with the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights. Last Tuesday's election was a success for many LGBT candidates around the country. From Mayor Anise Parker running for re-election in Houston to a 22-year-old new mayor in Holyoke, Massachusetts, gay candidates saw wins on Election Day. Among the winners is Daniel Hernandez, the gay intern who helped save the life of Republican Gabrielle Giffords when she was attacked by a gunman in Arizona. He was widely encouraged to pursue a career in public service, and now he's won his first election. Hernandez was elected to the Sunnyside Unified School District's governing board in Arizona with more than 60% of the vote. It was only Hernandez's first week on the job when a gunman went on a deadly shooting spree during an outdoor event with voters. Hernandez became one of the story's heroes, praised by President Obama himself for loyalty attending to Giffords, who had been shot in the head. And a new study released on Wednesday reports that 9 in 10 teenagers say they have witnessed cruelty by their peers on social networking websites. For the vast majority of teens, Facebook is the social network of choice. They say that incidents of mean and cruel behavior are pervasive and cut across all ages and backgrounds on social networks. This according to a study by the Pew's Research Center Internet and American Life Project, which surveyed 800 children between the ages of 12 and 17. The data on Internet experiences for young people is not all bad, though. 8 in 10 teenagers say they've developed positive feelings about themselves and forged better relationships on social networking sites. Still, the prevalence of mean behavior, a term the center doesn't define, raised concerns among child safety advocates and parents who say adolescents may be subjecting themselves to unhealthy online environments. Of course, bad behavior among children has been around for a long time, as youngsters have stolen milk money and scribbled insults on bathroom walls. But there is something about the ease of communication on the Internet that invites an abundance of commentary about peers, so the report says. That escalates when people gang up on an individual. Of the teens who said they witnessed cruelty online, 21% said they joined in on the harassment. Facebook, with its 80 million global users, requires its members to use their real identities, which it thinks is one way to prevent anonymous bullying. It also allows users to block photos and comments about themselves that they don't like. And do you remember Alan Osman? Osmond, who sang with his younger brothers in the 1960s and 70s, posted a very misguided and ill-informed article on his website, The Family, last July, but it's now just getting some media attention. On his website, Osmond writes, "It's important to understand that homosexuality is not innate and unchangeable. Research has not proved that homosexuality is genetic. Even more important, many researchers whose studies have been used to support a biological model for homosexuality have determined that their work has been misinterpreted. What is clear is that homosexuality results from an interaction of social, biological, and physiological factors. These factors may include temperament, personality traits, sexual abuse, familial factors, and treatment by one's peers. Development factors aside, individuals can diminish homosexual attraction and make changes in their lives." For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Music with Michaela Kennan.
You're listening to the sounds of Beth Welch Snellings. I had the opportunity this week to chat with her. She is a cello player and a musician from San Francisco. Let's take a listen to the interview. I'm excited to have on the phone with me Beth Welch Snellings, who is based in San Francisco. She's been performing cello and concerts all over the Bay Area for the last 20 years. She is a music teacher, private instructor, a music event coordinator, even a composer and arranger of everything from classical to jazz pieces, all kinds of venues, whether a formal auditorium concert or the grand opening of an art show. Beth, welcome to Outbeat Music and KRCB Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So tell me about your fascination and your love for the instrument cello.
Yeah, well, the cello is a really wonderful instrument because the thing that attracts me to it is the range. The cello can play really low notes as well as really high notes, and it's actually the full range of the human voice.
That's interesting.
The low baritone notes if you think of a baritone singer, and then all the way up into the soprano, really high notes. So that's something I really like about the cello. And one other thing is I really love the sound of both plucking the strings and also playing with the bow. So there's a really wide palette of sounds that appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
and lots of other people, I think.
Yeah. Well, I like it, too. I love the low registers, you know, mm-hmm. just that vibration that comes. But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Now, does that go over, that crosses over to stringed instruments in general, correct?
Yeah, I would say that I've always gravitated towards stringed instruments. As a kid, I grew up in a musical family and actually played a lot of different instruments as a child and into my teenage years, which I'll talk about later, I think. But one of my first instruments that I learned how to play was guitar. Mm-hmm. And I really felt that was the instrument for me, and for a while anyway.
Mm-hmm. And did you do kind of the folk strumming? Did you get into the more classical finger
styles? Yeah, I was like, I think I was like 7, and one of my sister's boyfriends had a guitar, and there was a chord book lying around, one of those Mel Bay, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The pictures of where you put your fingers on the strings, so...
Mm-hmm.
So I just got that thing out and taught myself how to play, you know, a few of the basic chords just to sing along with, you know, like songs that I already knew, like Puff the Magic Dragon and, you know, that kind of thing,
kids' songs.
Yeah.
And then that sort of laid the foundation. You became you kind of fell in love with the stringed sound.
Mm-hmm.
And you moved into... As you grew into it, you kind of did the crossover with classical training, and then
maybe I'll just you know, feel free to pipe in if you feel like I'm talking too long about where the cello came in, the timeline of my life.
Yeah,
but,
no, go.
But guitar, I was playing guitar just on my own. I didn't have guitar lessons or anything. I just liked it, and it was fun, and I didn't have to, you know, be on a practice schedule or anything like that with it. But piano, like a lot of kids, I started with piano lessons, actually, even before guitar. 6 years old, I started with piano, and I was a very diligent student, and I liked piano, but somehow I didn't like it as much as guitar. I stayed with the piano for a while, and then when I was in fourth grade, while still studying the piano lessons and everything and playing guitar just on my own for fun by myself, then I started playing clarinet in school when I was in fourth grade, and played in the band in school, and so I was juggling those instruments, playing those, and then when I was in 11th grade in high school, that's when I had the opportunity to play cello, and that's when I started cello. So mm-hmm. I got kind of a later start than a lot of people. I was 16 when I started cello, and then when I got that chance, fortunately I had an amazing teacher, cello teacher, and I was cello kind of took over, and all of my practice time went to the cello from that point on.
Excellent. Who were some of your early musical influences?
As far as people or I knew or just...
Any of it, really. I'm thinking of even when I was small, I'd look up to... of course, I grew up in the 60s, so I had a lot of the Peter, Paul, and Mary type Chad and Jeremy, Beatles, folk sounds, New Christy Minstrels, all those folks. And I played the guitar as well. Same thing. I picked it up kind of self-taught enough that I could, you know, do all the folk singing and get away with looking like I knew more than I really did. But So who were some of the people that you kind of emulated or thought, gosh, I want to be like them?
Well, I had that I remember, you know, as I said, and I know this is a common story with... When I was a kid, you know, with that guitar, and I was, you know, wanting to learn the Monkees songs, you know, playing along with the record. Of course, the Beatles. My older sisters had the Beatles records around, and I learned how to play some of those songs. So I had this fantasy of being in a rock band or something like that, or being famous with my guitar, singing, because I just love singing.
Right.
And I remember even calling a recording studio, getting out the yellow pages. I was all of 10, and I called just, you know, asking the question, well, you know, how do you make a record? How, you know, how mm-hmm. does one? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just wanted to find out. I just thought, well, why not call the recording studio and find out?
So, that was really insightful of you. Gosh.
Yeah. So I got, you know, I don't remember exactly. Obviously, nothing came of it, but... But I just remember doing that. And then that was, so, you know, the pop music that was around in the early 70s or, you know, 70s and late 60s when I was playing instruments. Also, jazz music was in my, I was hearing jazz music because my dad, is a jazz musician. He's a saxophone player, and so he had a lot of music like Stan Getz, who's a tenor saxophone player. He loved listening to that music. I remember hearing that a lot. And, of course, the Dave Brubeck was really popular in the late 60s.
Right.
So we heard a lot of Paul Desmond, alto saxophone. So I remember listening to that kind of music, and then the bossa nova was everywhere.
Of course.
And then as I started getting more involved in the school music program as a clarinet player, and certainly with my piano, but I remember clarinet, it was kind of more of a focused, serious kind of classical music training. And so I started listening to more classical symphony music, and then when I started the cello, then I really started listening to a lot of, you know, strings music and cello music, mm-hmm. and I was just really excited by all that.
Yeah. So then where did your formal education take place?
Well, I grew up in Atlanta, and then when I finished high school there, I went to University of Arizona in Tucson, and I went there on a full scholarship for 4 years as a cello student.
Good on you.
Huh? So I got my music degree there, and then I came to San Francisco directly after that to the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, where I studied for 2 years, and then I received my bachelor music degree in cello.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you a certified teacher as well, or?
Yes.
Yeah.
After I finished school at the Conservatory of Music with my graduate degree, then I pounded the pavement for work, which I gradually built up a career as a freelance performer in various regional orchestras, and I did a lot of private teaching at that time, and so I did that for 12 years, and then I wanted a change of pace, so because I felt that I was just driving all over the place, and it was starting to just, I just wanted a change, so I went back to school at San Francisco State after 12 years of piecing together a living, and got my teacher's credential in music. And then I did some full-time teaching for several years as a music teacher at various schools in the Bay Area. And I realized that I didn't want to do that full-time because then I, because the nature of that is that if you have a full-time music teaching job, it kind of takes over the life. You know, there's not, for me anyway, it was hard for me to have the time and the energy to play my instrument and
right.
and perform the way I wanted to just be happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided that the full-time music teaching life was not for me.
Yeah, and what people don't really realize is that teaching's more than, when you've got a teaching job, it's more than just going in and being before a classroom. And there's a lot of after-school preparation and
classroom planning. Yeah, there is. There's a lot of mean, I actually enjoyed parts of it, the whole. I'm really glad that I've had that experience, not only as an elementary teacher, but also a music teacher, but also as a high school music director of a program. I had a job at a high school for 2 years, actually at Albany High School. I was the director there for 2 years, and I learned a lot.
Boy, yeah.
And that was a real musical job. I mean, it was not babysitting at all. It was really high-level performing job. And that was actually an interim assignment. When I took the job, I knew it was going to be a 2-year stint.
Mm-hmm. But it gave you just a really rich experience.
It did.
I was directing
a jazz band. I was conducting a concert band. I started a string orchestra program there that's still going. You know, it was a really intense job.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of thing, though, where, you know, you could just kind of live at the school, you know, just roll out your sleeping bag in your office and, you know, because it's just so much work to do for one person.
Yeah, yeah. But it gave you, again, like I said, that background of richness. It then, as I kind of read your bio, I saw where you started to really be able to branch out in the directions you want. So you perform, you teach, now you entertain at a lot of different events.
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus in on the performer role. At that time, I'm imagining that you were able to get in and do some TV and some theater work. It enabled you to travel to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I was one of the many things that I've done is as a performer is I was on a tour in Europe performance in the wonderful music of West Side Story, and it was a touring show over there. And I did that. And I've also worked on a cruise ship not so long ago, about a year and a half ago. I was on a cruise ship for 4 months as well in the Caribbean in a string quartet.
Well, that's a pretty darn good gig.
Yeah, it was a good job. It came at a good time for me. And so I said yes, and I'm really glad I did, because the quartet I was in was not preformed. I was a little bit of a gamble because I didn't know the other musicians. We met each other, which is a typical thing that can happen. Anyway, so we were put together by an agency, and it worked out. And so those are the most far-flung travel experiences that I've had: the European tour for 4 months, and then the cruise ship in the Caribbean for 4 months. Mm-hmm. And then most of the other work I've done has been, as a performer, has been in California.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you teach, now you've done the music camps and you teach privately, did you come to develop your own learning method, sort of uniquely tailored to your style and your sensibilities? Or do you follow maybe a more organized, formal type of training course?
Well, I do lots of different kinds of teaching. As far as I do a lot of teaching that's oriented towards cello itself, and then I also teach strings, beginning strings classes in a group setting, and I also coach string quartets, kids that are in a youth orchestra called the Golden Gate Philharmonic in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So I do some chamber music coaching as well. That's what that's called.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as my teaching methods go, I would say that it kind of depends on the situation. If it's a strings class of, say, fifth graders who are wanting to learn how to play beginning violin and beginning cello, so, say, 20 to 25 kids all together learning how to play the instrument, I try to keep it really, you know, moving, keeping it so that they're doing lots of different things, like moving around, not too much about reading music, just to get them moving and playing and feeling that cohesion that you get in a large group.
Mm-hmm.
The smaller the group, the more talking, a little bit more talking you can do. But when you have a large group, you know, you just have to keep it moving.
Right, right. It keeps their interest as well, I would imagine.
Sorry?
It keeps their interest.
Oh, yeah. So with cello, with one-on-one cello lessons, again, it depends on, I think that I pretty well, to answer your question, I think what I do is with the one-on-one situations or very small groups, I size up what people's personalities are pretty quickly or kind of, you know, just I try to not just put a stamp on the situation. I just kind of feel it out with, okay, so what? How does this person tick, you know, mm-hmm. as much as I can?
Mm-hmm.
I
would say that's the mark of a good teacher.
And it's really easy to do that when it's just one-on-one.
Right.
And then when you start talking about a group, you know, three or four people at the same time, then that's a little more, it's kind of hard to describe it. I try to listen and watch to see what they're responding to
right.
and what they're not
mm-hmm.
responding to, and then adjust accordingly as far as what I say, how much I say.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think in part what I'm wanting you to convey to the audience is you can be a 15-year-old that is going to maybe find their niche in the world of stringed instruments, or you could be a newly retired 60-year-old who says, I'm ready to kind of do something I've always wanted to do and never had the opportunity. I think I'll play cello. And then you as the instructor can come in and really kind of tailor the experience, the novelty, the techniques, all toward making it a really quality experience for the individual.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have... I've had a lot of experience with adult students. I right now have three adult students, and all the rest of my students are kids of various ages. And so, you know, I want to even with, you know, with a new student, no matter how old they are, I say, why do you want to play cello? You know, that's, you know, I ask them a lot of questions about what, you know, what they want
sure.
and what their goals are and why
yeah.
they like the instrument, why they decided they wanted to learn how to play, and then I can take it from there.
Good. So years ago, I had a friend who was wanting to be a conductor, and this was back in the mid-80s. She was an avid musician, but her goal was really to be standing on that podium. What she encountered in her graduate studies was actually kind of an ingrained gender discrimination.
Mm.
At that time, it was very male-dominated.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in the Midwest, of course, so maybe that made a difference. Did you ever run into any of that kind of thing as you were coming up through the professional ranks?
I must say no. Entered the workforce, so to speak, in the mid-80s, or no, actually late 80s by the time I finished my graduate degree. So my intent was to, you know, just take a lot of auditions, get as much work locally as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And as a cellist, I didn't ever feel that that I was at a disadvantage
mm-hmm.
As far as being a woman is concerned. I do know what you're talking about. I think that in the world of, at that time anyway, the late 80s or the 80s, which is when I think you were talking about
mm-hmm.
your friend,
mm-hmm.
As a conductor it would have been a bit different because of the tradition. One experience that I have, one of the orchestras that I played in for quite a few years as was the Women's Philharmonic, which is not in existence anymore. It was a Bay Area professional orchestra called the Women's Philharmonic, and the music director of that orchestra, her name is Joanne Folletta, and her the Women's Philharmonic was one of her first professional jobs as a conductor. And right now, Joanne Folletta is the music director of two orchestras, the Virginia Symphony and the Buffalo Philharmonic. So Joanne would be somebody who, you know, and who is a real success story, who started off as a young, I think she had just finished Juilliard, and was embarking on her career, getting, you know, with the goal of being a professional conductor. And so, of course, there are quite a few successful conductors who are women. Maren Alsop, who is the music director of Baltimore Symphony, and many more who are less famous. So, personally, though, I must say I perhaps it's being in this area, San Francisco, which has helped. Maybe if I was in, Podunk, Mississippi, or somewhere like that, it might have been
whole
different,
different experience.
Yeah.
Let's talk just very briefly, and then we're going to kind of need to wind down here. Many people don't really think about the physicality, the actual body involvement when you're playing the cello, but that's a very physical kind of instrument, you know, not only in terms of your body size in relation to the instrument size, but then there's a lot of more visceral and emotional component to playing it well also. Just speak to us a little bit about what all of that involves.
Well, the strings, I think that any instrument is sensitive to the energy that the player puts into it, whether it's a wind instrument or a guitar or a trumpet or any instrument. The strings, the cello itself is one image that I can remember using with teaching sometimes. Is the strings are like our vocal cords. So if we feel tense and our muscles are tense and we play the strings with tense muscles, then it's going to sound that way. And in particularly with the bow on the strings, the bow is a very delicate and sensitive tool, and so however we're feeling physically, if we put that kind of energy into the string, it's going to give that right back to us. That's what we're going to hear. And so I really like the cello, the size of the instrument, and it's kind of the right size. And for me, I'm pretty tall, but you know, any doesn't matter how tall or short you are, as far as cello is concerned, can fit with anybody. And one thing that as I said at the very beginning of our interview, you were asking me about the stringed instruments and the strings family of instruments. And one thing that maybe the listeners will notice when they hear the samples of music that you're going to play at some point during the Outbeat radio hour, is they'll hear me playing the cello like a guitar, and they'll also hear some different ways, different kinds of sounds that the cello is capable of. So anyway, I hope that's answering your question about the physicality of the instrument a little bit.
Right, right. And again, it's becoming sensitized. Again, we as listeners listen to it, but we don't really think about what goes into hearing the beautiful sounds that we're listening to. And as I said, I love that really deep resonance of the strings, especially the lower registers. Those kind of just crawl through me sometimes, depending on what I'm hearing. So, you do a lot of entertaining. I know that you are sometimes featured at art openings. You've done certainly receptions and special events for maybe businesses and organizations. That's a fun gig, right? I would imagine it's great for the atmosphere. It's nice to have the live music, and you get to be there with all the hustle and bustle of the crowds. Fun for you, correct?
Oh, yeah. And my part of, I have various streams of ways that I make my living as a working musician, and we've talked a lot about some of the different kinds of performing that I've done and continue to do, and obviously the teaching aspect. We've also talked about one of my I play a lot as a background, so providing background music at weddings and events.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I have been hired as a solo cellist on numerous occasions, and also more typically I'm hired as a member of a group, like a violin and cello duo or a string trio, violin, viola, cello, or sometimes a string quartet.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the more musicians you hire, the more expensive it is.
Yeah.
So I'm a music coordinator, so I hire myself and other people when people contact me for if they're interested in hiring musicians for their event, whatever it is, whether it's an anniversary party or an art opening, as you said, or a wedding, or lots of things.
Sure, sure. And then, do you have any current projects in the works right now, or? We're getting into the holiday season, so I imagine you've got some weekends booked, correct?
Well, I'm definitely working on that. And I'm going to be performing at... I'm actually in the process of negotiating with an agent about possibly performing in, say, for example, in downtown San Francisco at a few different office buildings right around the holidays, around lunchtime.
Uh-huh.
So I'm still working on that. I just have finished a very busy wedding season up in the Napa and Sonoma Valleys. And that's been a huge... that's kept me quite busy on many weekends over the past several months. And
also a good reason to come here to wine country, too.
Sorry?
It's a good reason to come here to wine country.
Oh, yeah. I know the drive between San Francisco and Napa very well.
Well, you need to come over to the Sonoma side where we are. Actually, we're probably fairly close to where we are here at the studio, but we have a little wine country joke where we say Napa makes auto parts, Sonoma makes wine.
Yeah, Sonoma Valley is really my favorite, if I have to choose.
Yay!
Less developed and just prettier.
Right, right. Yeah, we have a good time here. We like where we live.
I hope I don't get in trouble for saying that.
No.
But I have seen a billboard that says, welcome to Sonoma Valley, real wine country.
Uh-huh. Yep,
have you
that's
seen
right.
That?
Yes, yes. Yeah, and we know what that means, and we believe in it, so... So if we are interested in booking you for an event or a reception, even taking lessons, what's the best way to connect?
Well, I have a website which I can give you, and maybe you can reiterate if possible.
Uh-huh.
And the web address is my full name, so it's www.BethWelchSnellings.com.
And that's Snellings with an S.
Yeah, and I can spell it out. It's BethWelch. S is in Sam, N is in Nancy, Ellings. BethWelchSnellings.com.
Excellent. Excellent.
And that is my website where there's a lot of information and pictures of me, testimonials from students and various people that I've worked with, music samples. You can hear me playing different styles of music, jazz music and classical music, and a contact page.
Good, good. And I'm sure you check that often so we can...
Yes, I get, I actually get inquiries quite frequently.
Good.
About various things.
Good.
So it's working quite well for me.
Excellent. Well, I will say it's been a real pleasure having you on the phone, and I will reiterate your contact information a little bit later in the show. Also, we'll play a few samples so that the folks can get to hear a little bit on air of your style and the beautiful sound of the cello. In the meantime, thank you for being with us. I appreciate your taking the time, and we'll look to hopefully to see you up here in Wine Country.
Well, thanks so much, Mikala, and I appreciate your reaching out to me, and I'm glad that your show is on the air every week.
Yeah, tune in. So Outbeat Radio, krcb.org.
Will do.
Thank you very much. And
thank you.
We'll be in touch, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Welcome back, and again, if you are interested in connecting with Beth, she will be starting a music class at the LGBT Community Center on Market Street in San Fran. This class runs for 10 weeks, starts in January 11th, 2012, and is for adults interested in learning how to play in an instrumental ensemble. If you are an adult string, woodwind, or brass musician, can read music, would like to learn more about the ensemble playing, do give Beth a shout at 415-422-0976 or via her website at BethWelchSnellings.com. BethWelchSnellings.com. Thanks so much, Beth. It was good to hear from you. And what you're hearing now is actually just a couple of samples from Beth's varied talent. Do join her in San Francisco. And in the meantime, let's hear a few other songs featuring the cello as the main voice. Thank you. Tomas Machado giving us a little prelude to paradise from his CD entitled Beauty and Fire. What I hope you heard was the sensual dialogue that's taking place between the cello and the guitar. There is a piano in there as well. The idea is as if two or three separate musical voices are all having a conversation. That's the beauty of the cello. Next week on Outbeat Collage, Gary and I will be chatting with Charlie Pendergast, Kevin Connor of Risk Press Gallery and Foundation here in Sebastopol. Their work helps benefit Food for Thought. We'll also have with us Dr. Diana Grayer. Many of you know her from the Outbeat Living Proof program. She has just published two books highlighting self-esteem and positive affirmations for young people, so we'll be anxious to talk with her about that. Next month on Outbeat Music, we're into holiday time, and I'll return with a rockin' jingle journey through the seasonal sounds that you may have never heard before, or at least heard these renditions. We'll highlight some unusual arrangements, some vocal renditions, and a lot of musical collaborations, actually creating kind of a gaily holiday spin on traditional favorites. All of that happens 8 p.m. Sundays here on KRCB Radio. If you have any questions or comments, would like to know more about Outbeat programming, do check out our website at outbeatradio.org or email us at info@outbeatradio.org. We finish out the program with grand cellist Yo-Yo Ma and a live performance of Dolce de Coco from his CD entitled Obrigado, Brazil. Thanks for being with us. Until next time, as always, be real, be remarkable, and don't forget to keep a song in your heart. I'll see you then.